Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center, an NCI-designated cancer center, online at www.umgcc.org, or the number for more information for the University of Maryland Marlene and Stuart Greenebaum Cancer Center is 1-800-888-8823. Anthony and I are joined here by Nicole Ambrose, who joins us by phone. She's the Republican National Committee, Maryland National Committee woman, and good to have you on the air with us.
Great to be here.
Always great
Happy
to have
Monday.
You. Yes.
Hi, Nicole.
Same to you.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Oh, too bad I don't get to be there.
I know. I would love to see you.
We were hoping you were going to be in studio with us. Tyrone Keyes is here, principal in the Maryland-based strategic and legislative consulting firm ARC Adaptus LLC, when he's not running around as he was today as a volunteer fireman for Baltimore County.
Right. How you good doing, Mark?
Welcome. Good to have you, Tyrone. And Bob Somerby, editor of the Daily Howler, back in the studio.
Hey.
And 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us in the conversation. One of the things we're talking about during the break, and I said at the top of the hour, was people think that this is the most the nastiest election in American history.
Campaign.
And I would say if you think that, you probably don't study history very much. And Bob says
it's certainly the dumbest. the dumbest. I have a hard time believing there's ever been a dumber. And it's just staggering how the intellectual level of the political discourse has disintegrated, even in the last, let's say, two or three cycles. Campaign 2000, which I've done a tremendous amount of work on, there was endless ridiculous claims being made about Al Gore. But there were also actual policy proposals being made. Candidate Bush actually made relatively full-blown. His tax proposal he made a year ahead of time. It's exactly the one he passed. There were clear-cut proposals being made. There was all kinds of nonsense going on, all kinds of ludicrous stuff being said about Gore. But there was also a serious level of discussion going on. There's nothing like that now. It's just complete nonsense. The press corps has ceased to exist. There is no press corps. And I think that's what it comes down to. There is no press corps. And so any ridiculous claim, it's just a battle of ridiculous claims.
Right. I would agree. I think that the press has often been looked at as the fourth branch of government, that branch that would keep an eye on the other three and ask them the probing questions. But last week you had President Obama answering questions from Entertainment Tonight, including, what is your favorite Mexican food? And, you know, that I mentioned that one specifically because that's the one that immediately comes to mind. But you've got stuff on the other side as well. What's Paul Ryan's workout program? You know, probing questions that will actually affect the American people, not. So you've got this level of dumbing down that's going on. It's not helping the situation with regard to the informed voters out there.
And I think, Mark, one of the frustrations for those of us who consume a great deal of news, who consume a great deal of information, is that there has to be an accountability to this president. There has to be an accountability held of this Republican nominee on the crisis we find ourselves in. And it really does. I think it comes down to the questions and the public holding them accountable, because if we're waiting for the press, we're going to be woefully disappointed. I saw something where they were offering, before the picture was released online, several web groups were offering thousands of dollars for photographs of the vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan without his shirt on. And it really is a disturbing trend when we can't probe Medicare, when we can't ask the difficult questions, but we're really trying to track down online or through the public if we can get a shirtless photo of the man who would be vice president of the United States.
Nicole?
Well, superheroes to the rescue. That's what you guys are here to talk about tonight. Real issues. Very nice.
Well, we attempt to, but I mean, the question, and just kind of looking where this presidential election is going, one of the things that I read today that was actually shocking to me that I didn't expect to read was that President Barack Obama has had less press conferences at this point in his presidency than even President Bush. The last President Bush, and it's a strategic move.
Absolutely.
Republicans saying that it was – some Republican strategists saying it's a very bright move on Obama's part. But for that to be a bright move, not to have not to stand before the press, to reporters, at least in the White House, who may ask serious questions, probing questions.
Or not.
All right. But may more than that. But there may be there. Definitely. There are people in that press corps more than in other places who would ask those questions, choosing not to do that in front of the people.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, it's Nicolay. I totally agree with you on that. And I think it's all 100% deliberate and intentional. And I think the reason for that is the president does not want to be caught off teleprompter because he knows he gets into trouble if he is, right? That's when you get comments like, you didn't build that. That's when you get comments like, whenever he has gone off script and tries to explain the disaster of an economy we have, it becomes very clear to Americans that those are, let's just say, not his strongest issues. And so I think he very intentionally avoids the press corps and having to answer off-the-cuff questions.
Well, let me say this. Romney's completely avoiding the press corps, too. And by the way, I'm going to vote for Obama and not for Romney. But it's perfectly sensible for candidates to avoid the press corps because we've developed a press corps now where basically the press corps exists to wait till someone says something that comes out a little bit funny. And Romney's been trashed for all kinds of comments. I like to fire people, all kinds of things. Slightly, you know, as Kerry was 8 years ago, I was for it before, I was against it. What he was saying then made perfect sense. The press corps clowned about it for month after month. We've developed a press corps now where candidates understand if I say something that's even slightly funny sounding, that isn't perfectly scripted, I'm going to be trashed and mocked for it. I don't blame candidates for avoiding the press corps at this point. It would be better if that weren't the case. But both candidates are getting beat up over silly. The press corps just waits for distractions. We have a journalism of distraction now, and candidates are aware of this. No, they don't want to talk to the press corps. And when you see Ann Romney saying if we released our tax returns, people would just go through it and look for stupid stuff, that's exactly what they would do. They would go through it and look for stupid stuff. That's exactly what the press corps would do.
Right, and we remain focused on, for instance, like you just said, the tax issue with Mitt Romney. I think we can all agree he's rich. I think that there's no further debate needed about that. The man's rich. If you don't like rich people, then he's not your candidate. Continuing to probe on this tax return issue takes us away from the economy, which the masses have in common in terms of needing employment, needing to forestall foreclosure, things of that nature. But again, the other thing about the press corps, especially the White House press corps, is you better not rock the boat over there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because if you do, you'll get moved to the back. You won't get pointed at when it's time to ask questions. So there are ramifications for asking hardball questions over there.
Well, before you all jump in, Anthony, I would take issue with Romney's not releasing his tax returns. I mean, I think that is something you would expect of a candidate of the United States of America for President of the United States or any other major candidate. To know what, because the reason that people, because what he's done is set this thing up where people think you don't pay your taxes.
He
you don't
did
pay as much as.
The past 2 years.
He has not released his taxes completely. He just hasn't. And he won't do it. And that's one of his. I mean, that's a real problem.
He's released 1 year.
1 year. And I think that's strategically and in terms of transparency for him a real problem. I think that.
I'm not saying he should or shouldn't release. I'm just saying, as a matter of fact. And by the way, there's so much stuff in the 1 year he has released the press corps should be examining. They're not going to examine
it. Right,
exactly. Because that's not what they do. They went through and found the $77,000 for the dancing horse, and they were laughing about that. That's what they do. And if he released 10 years, they would go through and looking for 10 of those things. And they wouldn't examine if there were things in there that should be. I think there are. They don't do that. McCain released two years of tax returns.
A few questions here. One, was there a similar concern about McCain releasing the same amount of tax returns? Because Romney has released what McCain did, exact same amount.
What?
So that's the first question. The second question is, why aren't we sitting here ranting and raving about all the documents Obama hasn't released?
Like what?
Well, I'd still personally love to see all the things like his transcripts and all these basic documents that pretty much we see for every other presidential candidate who has ever run in modern history. And we still don't have this for our sitting president.
I don't think any candidate has ever released his college transcript. Now, some candidates in recent campaigns, college GPAs were leaked. I don't think any candidate has ever released his been asked to.
It becomes less of an issue when you consider the fact. And, you know, I'm voting for Romney. President Obama could drop Biden and replace him with my mother. I'm voting for Romney. But the college transcript issue, there's no GPA prerequisite to becoming president of the United States. Hey, if I had to account for a semester or two of my college transcripts, I probably wouldn't be deemed to, you know, be qualified to sit here and talk with you guys right now. So that's a dead issue. As a conservative, we should be hammering away on the one issue that the president is by far weakest on, this economy. I mean, there's more than enough ammunition right there.
I agree with you that we have to have the conversation about the economy. We all do. It is the issue that impacts us all across the board. And when we see the people, see, at the end of the day, I really don't care so much about what the press is dropping the ball on, because when President Obama and when candidate Romney, Governor Romney, have to go before the people at the end of the day, they're going to have to answer those questions. The sad part for me remains that every debate is so staged, every campaign stop is so ridiculously staged, that we're really never going to get to the heart of the issues or figure out where President Obama is going to change going forward and what Mitt Romney would actually do to solve problems. I don't hear it. What you hear is a great deal of very parsed out words and attacks. I am stunned at the level that President Barack Obama, has become adept at attacking Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. That's not the Barack Obama I remember during the primary in 2008 and who really outwitted John McCain in that election. And when I watch him, I am stunned at the level he has allowed himself to go after them. By the same token, every attack that Mitt Romney and now Paul Ryan, it's not a question of policy they're attacking. They have talking points that are so vague in general but sound so horrible and disastrous that you really do – I mean, it's almost like some game or whatever you call it where you really don't gain anything from either side actually talking about the issues. I don't.
And I can tell you that is – you know, I'm looking at this. I did not vote for a president in 2008. I voted for other issues, but not for president. Neither candidate excited me. And when I looked at it objectively this time, the president is not talking about how he would repair this economy. The one idea that I have heard him mention was yet another stimulus. When you're in a hole, put the shovel down and think of some new ideas. Very quickly, when Bill Clinton was dealing with his issues with the economy, he came outside of his ideology. He developed a bipartisan solution, and the economy skyrocketed. With the Telecom Act of 1996, it took off from there. Who, 9 times out of 10, people don't remember who the Speaker of the House was that he compromised with. You remember Bill Clinton, and you remember Clinton's runaway economy. The same would be true for this president if he tried some new ideas.
But I will tell you that people are arguing the exact opposite of what you just said. There is no better time. I watched all the talking head shows this week, and I'm sure all of you did. Some people arguing there is no better time than now for us to push another stimulus, for us to release. Of course, okay.
But that in fact is a debate that we should be having.
Well, I'll just say this about the coming debates, and there are going to be 3 presidential debates. And Anthony, I take it you were suggesting that at least we'll at least have that. We don't necessarily have that because that depends on what they're asked, and then the press corps goes to work afterwards. And going back, let's again to the 2000 debates, you had little silly things pulled out of, especially the first debate, completely, and that was with Jim Lehrer, who, by God, he said he wasn't going to do any more,
and
the whole world cheered, and you know, and now he's back. I would not expect, we'll have to see what happens. I would not expect a cogent set of debates and a cogent discussion after them. We'll have to see what happens. But it's amazing. We're back to the old American calendar where the actual campaign starts at Labor Day. I mean, campaigns in recent cycles have gone 12 months, 16 months, 18 months. Here it's August, And there's just nothing, really.
Less than
nothing.
Five days.
Go ahead, Nicole, then I'll open the phones.
Two things for you along those lines. One, on the Republican side, I think we are actually seeing a lot of excitement. I think that that downturn in voter activity you were seeing of potential voters who in the past voted for Obama not being excited to go out this cycle, you see the reverse on the Republican side. You have all these new people coming out of the woodwork who have never been involved in politics, really seeing how destructive these policies have been to our economy, to people getting jobs, to factories relocating to other countries, et cetera. America having the highest corporate tax rate does nothing but chase business out of this country. Which, what does that mean? That means jobs.
But that, actually, the last thing you said, I'll call the callers just left. I'm sorry. I promise I get you. You're gone. Join us again, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, and I'll get you right back on the air. Sorry about that, leaving you hanging, and we want to get you in here, 410-319-8888. Well, I hear what you're saying, and I think that, and it could be true, Paul Ryan may excite, especially I think the base on the right and some young people on the right coming out. I think that is true. I don't think it'll have the same bounce that Obama had, but 2008. But I think it's also just a matter of a fact. I mean, America does not have the highest business tax rate in the world.
We do have the highest corporate tax rate.
No, we do not. We do not. I mean, the tax rates of Germany and Italy and Britain are much higher than ours, and they've been for a long time, as is our tax on wealth, which we don't have in America very much. I mean, so whether you agree that's a good thing or a bad thing, again, we don't have the highest tax rate. I mean, that's why
the corporate tax rate. If you're a business owner and your decision is, gosh, how do I stay in business because I need to make a profit to stay in business, and your choice is I can leave my factory in Maryland, or I can build my distribution center here in Maryland,
okay,
or I can ship it off to China and have a factory built there for less money and pay people less, of course, you're going to choose the thing that keeps your company in business. And we have to realize the implication of that is jobs for Americans.
I hear you, and I think that's
businesses to stay located in America and not chase them out of our country.
And I agree with you, Nicole, and I think that's a salient point that we've got to push the debate on. But a lot of those decisions that you're talking about, and even the corporate tax, really we run into problems in these states. It really is a lot of these companies that you talk about have to balance the bottom line and make this hard decision about whether they're going to stay in Maryland or go to wherever they're going. They really make that decision based on the pressure they're getting from the state they're in.
And let me just say,
right on that front too, is Virginians love Maryland because every single company that keeps relocating to Virginia was looking at Maryland or Virginia. We are the biggest boon to Virginia's economy they could possibly ask for. So you're absolutely right. It is certainly, you know, elections have consequences, and if people vote for folks who promise to raise their taxes and do raise their taxes or do once they get in office, good luck. Guess what? What that affects is whether or not you have jobs in your state and what your unemployment rate is and what your quality of life is. Elections have consequences. And raising taxes drives out business, drives out jobs.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah.
Let
me just say, it would be fine if candidate Romney wanted to make build a campaign around the argument about companies leaving for China. But that's not what he's been arguing about. And what he has been arguing about is going completely unexplained, undiscussed, unclarified. No one has the slightest idea how any of these Medicare arguments work. I would be inclined to say what he's saying, his claim that Obama, quote unquote, stole $700 billion from Medicare. You know, that just isn't true. But try to find the New York Times discussing it. They have not discussed it. You had to go to their editorial yesterday where they started to discuss it, because in their news reporting, they're talking about what happened when he went to church yesterday.
That's
when he
right.
wordlessly suggested to his wife that she join the choir. I mean, they are dimwits run by children. Their reporters are all 11 years old now. They write like they're 11. We no longer have a press corps. So if Romney built a campaign around we're losing jobs to China, that would go undiscussed the same way what he's actually campaigning on going undiscussed.
So I promise our listeners, when they call back in, they get right back in. Let me do that. 410-319-8888, because what they want to say is relevant to what all of us have been talking about here. Jamar, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you doing?
Very well, welcome.
Good. I wanted to at least get the opinion of your guest as it relates to the economy. Now, I hear everybody, in general media in general, tending to the the issues that were happening with the economy as far as it not recovering on what President Obama has done. But it seems as though everyone is neglecting the fact that, you know, this is a world problem that the world economy is having, and the United States can't be separate from that. So even if you have someone doing a phenomenal job, right, it's what's happening in the rest of the world, especially with our close allies and trading partners, is still going to affect us. So it just doesn't seem logical to pin the blame on the president, no matter which president it is, but to really look at what is the government doing to correct the problem. And what I see is there's a lack of unity in the government. There is a lot of selfishness, because what's happening is the different candidates are vying to get back into office and to make the other one look as if they're not doing their job, rather than trying to solve the problem. I'm just wondering what your guests think about that.
The last part of his statement, I agree with that 100%. I think there's too much self-interest out there among these elected officials. They're worried. They don't live in the same world that we live in, and they're worried about interviewing for their job every 2 to 4 years, basically, and then, you know, doing what's necessary to placate the different corporate interests so that there'll be a job waiting for them after their public experience is done with. Now, the first part of what the gentleman was saying with regard to this being a global issue, it is. I mean, we're in a global economy. However, America is still the leading economy in the world. And part of the reason that the rest of the world has these financial issues is because of credit default swaps that were initiated right here in America. So America kind of led the way. And I'm not assigning party blame. I'm not going to be partisan on this. America kind of led the way on this global recession. But we can't look, the way things are designed, we can't look toward the UN or to the Prime Minister of France or Britain. We have to look right here at home and figure out how we're going to get out of this mess. The U6 unemployment rate, go to the Department of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, is over 14%. That's the true number of unemployment, not just those who are receiving the benefit. Okay, that's a real problem. And apparently the stimulus that Bush did, the stimulus that President Obama did nothing but dig the hole deeper. So we need some new ideas. And I haven't heard President Obama talking about that.
I'm not sure if we can say it only dug the hole deeper. But what we can say is that there is a fair argument to be made. If we were to discuss it, there's a fair argument to be made of no job growth or job loss for the last 18 months or however many months specifically has been, that we have continued to lose jobs in this country. But you have to take it even further back. I remember being on a show where my Republican colleagues were predicting that the unemployment was going to be over 10%. It would be the undoing of Barack Obama. They were predicting that if we were at 10% when we rolled around at 2011 and 12, that they had a very good chance of taking this White House from the Democrats. We are at 8.3%. And I'm not saying that we should be comfortable with that. And I certainly think we need to move on that. But let's be honest in the conversation. I get frustrated when Axelrod goes on television and tells lies. I get frustrated when I watch Romney just throw things out there and people eat it up as fact. And then the fact checkers come right behind them and you can dispute almost everything these folks are saying. The American people aren't getting an honest debate.
Let's take a quick break and come back. And we have Aaron John and Dr. Carter. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Get your calls as we look at this election and whether or not we're actually covering the issues or not. And we'll talk about these debates coming up and why there are no journalists of color in these debates. And does that make a difference? Should it make a difference? We'll talk about that as well. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. We are joined here by Nicole Ambrose, who is a Republican National Committee woman from Maryland, Bob Somerby, editor of the Daily Howler, Tyrone Keyes, principal in the Maryland-based strategic and legislative consulting firm Arc Adeptist LLC, and, of course, my co-host Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAA 5 to 7 p.m. On Fridays. 410-319-88. Maybe one day, but who knows?
Maybe, who knows?
410-319-88 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones, and John, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening.
I was listening to the show, and I was hearing a lot of different things that I'd love to comment on. But I'd like to start with the Romney over Obama and the idea of nobody's talking about the thing that's most important, which obviously is the economy. I think the biggest problem with talking about the economy is nobody wants to hear the truth. And in regards to the taxes running the businesses out of the country, that makes a lot of sense from a Republican standpoint. But I think the president or the leader that can help us move the country forward, who's actually on the right path, even though he needs guidance, would be Obama. And the reason why is because he realizes is that big business is not the key. Now, I understand that you say the taxes drive the big businesses out, but if you look what's going on in the country over decades, big businesses aren't the ones that's doing the hiring. Over decades, big businesses have a negative hiring rate. The key to growth and employment in the United States has always been small business. So if we can get more financial assistance to the small businesses and encourage entrepreneurship, then we can create jobs. But we can't count on big businesses. I don't know when the last time they created jobs.
You know, I cannot agree with you more that small business is the engine that drives our economy. That is by far where the most job growth comes from. But I'll tell you, I actually work for small business and work very hard to try to grow it. And before I worked for that business, I worked at the U.S. Department of Labor for the regulatory agency that really runs 200-plus of the workforce regulations that America has to be governed by, right? A lot of those laws are great, right? We don't want child labor laws. We want to protect workers from, you know, unsafe conditions. There are many fantastic labor laws that are in place. But what we have seen increasingly in the past few decades is a regulatory burden that makes it nearly impossible to stay in business if you are a small business. And whether it's just enormous amounts of reporting requirements in all different areas that it is hard to even find someone who understands regulations in that many different categories. If you actually hit 50 people in your business, which means you're on your path, you're doing well, your government, your business could be shut down if you get one of your reports wrong and you're in a certain line of business. It is very scary to be a small business in this country with a very high regulatory burden. And that is the type of thing that is terrifying to small business owners and small business leadership teams, because they know they could accidentally make a misstep. You know, we're not talking bad apples here. I'm going to say, okay, maybe they're 5% of bad apples, bad actors who just want to try to get away with stuff. I'm saying, though, that really most people just want to comply. They just want to understand what it is they need to do. And when we have a government that is constantly passing regulation after regulation, making it hard to be in business, it costs a lot of money to comply with that, to try to find the people to try to hire it, and then you can still make a mistake. And if you have a government that is adverse to business, you're done. They don't care that you were trying your best. You're done.
Bob?
Well, again, that would be fine if Romney ran a campaign like that, which he's not, but I'm wondering how the government has been constantly passing regulation after regulation if the Republicans control the House. And
because Obama's been doing it by executive order. He has been bypassing the Congress on pretty much everything possible and things that are not even possible that no president has ever done in the history of this country.
Let Bob finish his thought.
In our legislative process.
Bob.
There certainly are regulations that are done that don't go through Congress. But again, all I'll say is if Romney chose to run his campaign on that, we could have the hope of seeing a discussion of that. He's not running his campaign on that.
And this is where I have to give a shameless plug for the Wall Street Journal, because all those things that you've been saying you haven't been seeing in the New York Times, they're in the Wall Street Journal every day. His tax plan of 10% for most people, 25% for the top, getting our corporate tax rate more in line with the developed world, all those things. We've got all those proposals laid out. And I agree. I wish the press would cover him more, because Romney actually is out there trying to talk about it. Ryan is fantastic on economic issues. I can go on and on about it.
Go ahead, Bob.
No, let me say this about the tax plan. When the Tax Policy Center did the analysis of the Romney tax plan a couple weeks ago, the Washington Post and the New York Times gave it less than 400 words. The story completely disappeared. It was not discussed, analyzed further. Romney was not asked to explain it. When he goes on with Bob Schieffer, he asks him about the dancing horse. And liberals on MSNBC want to yuck about the horse and the dog and, you know, and this is the world we live in now. As a liberal, I would like to see Romney's tax plan discussed, because as someone who's going to vote for Obama, it's a joke. But it's not being discussed by the so-called liberal media. They like to talk about where are the tax returns, what's with the horse, and why did he strap the dog to the roof of his car 29 years ago. That's what they want to discuss.
Going back real quick to the caller and Nicolee's point with regard to the bureaucracy, I've got a problem with it, too. I mean, the Code of Federal Regulations at this point is 80,000 pages long, which is, 10 times longer than War and Peace or more. But and I'm going to be totally fair, straight down the line. That didn't start with President Obama. That goes way back into the Johnson administration and has continued for every administration since. It is a problem. In 10 years, you won't be able to get out of the bed without breaking a law, basically. And that's the direction that we're headed in. Again, before businesses start to really be able to even worry about that part of it, though, they need to be able to bring in paying customers. And with this economy in the shape that it's in today, that's becoming more and more difficult.
Well, let me just throw this out, and then we'll move on to another caller. And just to kind of mix it up a little bit. And again, this is somebody who is taking this from a non-democratic, non-Republican perspective, because I try not to be either one. But having said that, most Americans do think that America is overregulated. Most Americans and businesses think that. So maybe that's true, maybe it isn't true. And I think that's something that needs to be on the table and debated. However, I think you should, when you talk about our businesses overregulated, let me just read a list of things that where they have not been overregulated. Let's talk about the oil industry and oil spills. Ooh. Were they overregulated there with the federal government, full of the former oil people who let those things go on that led to disasters like in the Gulf of Mexico? No. Let's talk about the FDA, pharmaceuticals. Are they overregulated? I don't think so. Nuclear power, are they overregulated? I don't think so. And I think there are a lot of things you can go one after the other to talk about industries that have not been regulated at all. The question is, there are regulations that perhaps people need to debate. What does regulation mean? Are there those that stop people from growing a business? Let's look at those. Maybe they should be reevaluated. Are regulations that protect workers, the environment, our health, safety? Well, that's a different matter. I mean, there are things. So I think, but nobody's having that debate at all on either side of the aisle in a serious way.
And, Mark, I have to say, I work for a nonprofit that helps women and some men start small businesses, takes them from business plan all the way to implementation marketing. And I have never seen this much energy around creating small businesses. I mean, and maybe it's the circumstances.
That's exactly right.
But there are people who don't seem to have this same fear and dire predictions that Nicolee and Tyrone have. They are launching in head and feet first with their dreams and their ideas of entrepreneurship. They do get reality checks every day. It isn't, certain things are overregulated, and common sense doesn't play in public policy as much as we think it does or would like for it to. But there are opportunities here. And the other thing that I think we have to be very clear on, Paul Ryan, budget chair, may have energized that base. But I am polls are snapshots of moments. This pick has done absolutely nothing for Mitt Romney to be appealing to independent voters in this country.
Well, let me raise two issues here. First, let me go to the phones. I have two issues I really want to raise. One has to do with the coming debates, and another has to do with why people are not voting in droves. 410-319-8888. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello, is that me?
Yes,
yes.
Aaron, welcome.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Very well.
So I disagree that we have the highest corporate tax rate. And what we do have high corporate taxes for international companies, companies that have businesses here and, say, in China. So and that tax is only imposed when they want to bring that money back. So if they, but for small businesses, I work for a small business. We have under 200 employees, but we have a large capitalization. So we're over 100 million. But I don't see that there is a regulatory burden because those regulations deal with the quality of life. I don't want my children playing with toys with lead in them. I don't want lead paint in my toothbrush. I want clean air, clean water. So I think that the quality of life issues that folks are complaining of, you know, when they say overregulation, well, what would they give up? So I don't see an actual plan that would revive the economy coming from the Republican side. As a matter of fact, I would have preferred single payer health care, but that was blocked by the Republicans. I would have preferred to have a large bill that addressed not only how we revive the banks, but also how we deal with Main Street. But that was blocked by the Republicans. So those points didn't make it into President Obama's agenda because of negative activity from the Republicans.
And also, President Obama didn't push them as he said he would do in the campaign. He compromised quickly.
And compromise is what being president is all about. So, you know, he has to have some level of give and take. I want to go back very quickly to something Anthony said. I have an interest in two small businesses. I'm on the front lines. I don't work for the man. And by the way, caller, I am drinking, thanks to our producer, a nice clean glass of water. I am for clean air and clean water. There's a misconception out there that conservatives who eschew over-regulation are in favor of destroying the environment. Now, I'm sure, I don't know if the caller's still there, would you agree that the police descending on a 12-year-old's lemonade stand, would you agree that that's an example of overzealous regulation?
Well, he's not there.
I'm sure he would agree with that. That's what we're talking about here. Of course, there needs to be some level.
I mean, that's the kind of emotional exception, not the rule. Come on.
There needs to be some level of regulation. We all agree to that. You don't want Chinese drywall in your house. But there is a step at which it goes a bit overboard and it starts to kill small business. Trust me, I have a small business. I know.
Well, I do as well. So we can argue, but let's not get into
very
that.
Very small business.
Very small. I would say five people have health benefits and are working.
All right.
I
mean, that's pretty good. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
I'm kidding.
All right.
So let me raise another issue here. And I want to talk about the coming debates and that the issue has been raised primarily by black and Latino journalists around the country, that there are no people of color in these debates. And what that effect, does that have an impact in the debates? What does it really mean? And as somebody who's been really involved in NABJ, let me turn to you first.
Well, I know that here in Maryland, I'm so pleased when we have a gubernatorial debate or the congressional debates, and you and I have had the honor of moderating these and be a part of them. It almost seems like the campaigns go out of their way to include journalists of color. And that's being affirmative. That's being proactive. I am stunned in 2012. And we have to place the blame at both the feet of the Democrats and the Republicans because those campaigns choose these moderators. I'm stunned that there is not more efforts, and I know this sounds so liberal and all this diversity, to make sure that the people who are engaging in these important conversations around who will lead this nation don't look like more Americans. And I'm not saying that to have Candy Crowley and our friend at PBS do it. They are Americans. Obviously, they look like Americans. But when you have a lack of diversity, and I'm talking about people of color, and I'm not even being specific about the color, but we are a diverse nation. I'm stunned that we still have to raise a heck about making these very important educational moments in American history look like the full breadth of this country. And I'm very disappointed.
Well, Anthony, that's why I say come on down to the Republican convention with me. Consider working with a party that actually listens to and represents people. Two of my favorite Republican leaders who will be at the convention, one with a huge primetime speaking slot, Marco Rubio, senator from Florida, amazing man, a fantastic on economic issues, just my hero. And then we have Congressman Alan West, who is fantastic congressman from Florida. But I really, everyone keeps saying how we need to talk about the economy and get into issues. And I would just like to really plainly and simply address that.
Okay,
and
but I want, but we're trying to talk about it right now at the moment. We're trying to get into the what's going on with these. Does it make a difference that there are no people of color moderating these debates in America, not part of the debates? And that let's just deal with that for just a minute before we go back into the other realm.
You know, it's odd. It's sort of odd that there of the four different people this time, which is a break from a change from what's been gone on in recent campaigns. It's going to be four different moderators. They're all white. Gwen Ifill did the VP debate last time. She's not doing it this time. Now, I'll 2 points. One is, in terms of having young people looking at our political process and seeing the full spectrum of America's population, yes, I think it's not great. On the other hand, there's no way that having Gwen Ifill as opposed to Candy Crowley would change what was asked.
You're right.
Or what was said. I mean, so I'm saying that's still not a great thing. But it's not like it has any effect on anything anyone is asked or challenged on or questioned about. I mean, it just doesn't. So that's just the reality of it.
Well, I tend to agree with that, but I will add that we are talking about a visual medium, television, and image is everything. You go back to the first televised debate between Kennedy and Nixon. That, you know, that proved it right there. It laid the groundwork for what you put out on this medium has a definite impact. And you've got Juan Williams over at Fox. You've got Soledad O'Brien over at CNN. You've got real competent, you've got competent folk.
Let's not get carried away with that one.
Well, I'm not going to go too deep into their ideology. Right. But you've got an image you could put out there. And you're right. It's going to be so formulaic that, you know, you could put my beagle up there, and if he could talk, he could do the debate. But, I think that the image aspect of it says a lot. And, yeah, it should be more reflective of what America looks like.
Let me say again, children watch this. Children are learning what America it looks like, is like. Children who look all kinds of different ways. And they're trying to figure out, where do I fit in? And so it's, you know. Now, if you had panels instead of the single moderator, of course, there would have been more, but they've gone to single moderator.
Yeah. But.
Mark, and this is the last thing I'll say. We have friends, Darnell and his beautiful wife, Michelle, and they took their sons, their children to the White House.
All right.
And
right.
They posted some photographs that just were so emotional to me when I saw them. These children could not speak when they were in the presence of the president. Now, it's the office, but there was something for those little black kids to meet this president that really made it real to them. Now, not everyone gets to meet the president of the United States, but for them, they tell this poignant story of their children walking into that Oval Office and being absolutely stunned to silence in the presence of this black president.
I will say this. People of color will be overrepresented among the two candidates. On a percentage
it
basis.
Took me a second.
On a percentage basis.
Yeah. Okay.
It's worth understanding. I think when kids are looking at this, they are going to see an African-American man.
That's very true.
You're right.
Well, I mean, there are really journalists of note all over the country that could be people that you know and people you don't know that could be part of this debate. And, of course, they wouldn't pick the certain ones that may ask really difficult questions, and that's why they don't want to have panels anymore.
Right. That's right.
That's right.
Have
a more diversity of people to ask candidates the toughest questions that could be asked, and come from diversity of media. But we want to do that in this new program we have airing here called Beyond the Spin, which brings in journalists from around the country in community broadcasting, journalists who are journalists of color from African American, Latino, Native American stations, and other stations as well that are majority white. In a dialogue about this presidential election, there are lots of people out there doing this, but nobody is kind of even talking to them or having them part of the conversation about this election because that would mean breaking into the depth of an issue, the depth of how it affects a community, and we don't want to do that.
And a program like that is so important because, again, you've got this this rigid design of how the media talks with the public these days. And the dialogue that they put out there is again, so formulaic. I knew that there was going to be a breakdown in the media years ago when the local news would say, oh, yeah, tonight we've got this entertainment program coming on. And they used to basically do the lead up to Entertainment Tonight. That's when they started to move away from hard news. And if you wait until the half hour point in most local news programs, after they've finished reading the newspaper, which is basically what they do, then you get into the fluff. A fluff used to come in the human interest part 5 minutes till the hour when they were about to go off the air. But now it's at the half-hour point, and it's just not serious anymore.
Let me just read the email that just came in. I didn't have a chance to get them. They're just coming in now. But one, Duane writes in, the only thing I heard about Romney's tax plan is to reduce regulations and cut taxes on the so-called job creators and corporations. The only problem with cutting taxes on the job creators and corporations is relying on them investing the extra profits in their employees instead of pocketing the profits. If that was the case, then corporations would be making record profits and storing the largest amount of cash on record. Also, the only way the president and the government can create jobs is to employ and hire people. The president can only create an environment for businesses to do well and hire people, but it's still up to the businessmen to reinvest their extra profits.
Right. So what I said along those lines was Romney is looking for a 10% tax rate for most people. Isn't that a lovely, beautiful, simple thing? And 25%
probably not, but anything that's that simple is probably less than that. I just
don't think it's that simple.
And okay, so why don't you embrace simplicity, right? We all, as we talked about,
you're right.
Who wants to be overregulated? Who wants 80,000 pages of federal regulations? No.
It depends what those regulations are. It's very simple. You see, it's very kind of emotional to say it's 80,000 pages, but it depends what's in those regulations. What are we regulating? What are we not regulating? That's the issue, not whether you have 80,000 pages or 8 pages. It's what is in them.
Well, if you can understand it and keep me in line, I'd love for you to be my personal policeman. That would be fantastic.
I'm sure we can't. You know, I'm sure that America would continue to roll on quite nicely if we looked at maybe 15,000 to 20,000 of those pages and looked for, you know, because politicians go down to Washington, they go down to Annapolis with one thing in mind, passing laws.
So
they don't go down there with the idea of, hey, let's look at what we have on the books and pare back. They never do that.
Bob?
That's fine, but Romney isn't running on this. He's running on cutting everyone's taxes at a time when we're not generating anywhere near enough revenue to begin with.
Even John F. Kennedy.
Wait a minute.
Oh, come. Stop.
Wait.
No, I'm not going to let you say your point. The marginal tax rate was 91%, and Kennedy dropped it to 70%. Now, go ahead with your point, your bull-roar point that you people have been pumping out year after year. Make your point.
So, if we'd like to actually understand what Republicans are advocating for the economy, and I'd love to get through this.
Kennedy took it to 70%. Do you favor 70%?
Am I allowed to
go ahead?
Thank you. Reduce taxes. to 10% and 25%.
Kennedy said 70%.
Repeal Obamacare. And why this is so, I would suggest this is incredibly significant in two ways. Economically, because it would keep the government from overtaking one-fifth of the U.S. economy.
But John F. Kennedy took tax rates to 70%.
Okay, I'm talking about the U.S. government taking over a fifth of the U.S. economy.
I think you brought up John F. Kennedy.
Secondly, I would just suggest as a culture, we need to value human life, and having a health care bill that says there should be do not resuscitate orders.
First of all, that is such a lie. That is really a lie. There's nothing in that bill that says. I've read the bill. I have studied the bill. There's nothing in that bill that says that. Those panels have nothing to do with pulling the plug on anybody.
That's what John F. Kennedy said.
That's just ridiculous. That's not
happy
in there. It is not in there.
They finally published this just in time for the election. So we'll be able to use the black and white text.
It is not in there. This whole Sarah Palin gobbledygook about death panels is not in the bill. There are lots of things you may not like.
I will happily get you the links to this. Lastly, energy, which we've talked about, which is also a huge boon to our economy.
We have to take a break. We have to take a break into the next hour.
Gotta go.
And I want to thank all of our guests. It's been really interesting to have everybody here. Nicolae Ambrose, pleasure to have you with us at any time. Bob Somerville, an old friend, good to have you in the studio. And my new friend Tyrone Keyes, good to have you in the studio as well.
Congratulations, Nicolae. She actually becomes a national committee woman in Tampa.
Congratulations, Nicolae.
I'm excited for her.
We'll look forward to talking to you from Tampa.
Nope, she's gone.
Okay. We thank you all so much for being with us today, and we're going to take a break and come back to look at the issue of police shootings in Baltimore. Stay with us.